back in my compartment, a peculiar problem had developed. Haney, who had been one of the first to return from chow about 45 minutes earlier, had ensconced himself on the seat of one of the two toilets in the small head on our side of the compartment. There he sat, dungaree trousers down to his knees, his beloved leggings laced neatly over his boondockers, grinning and talking calmly to himself while smoking a cigarette. Nervous Marines lined up using the other toilet one after another. Some men had been to the head on the other side of the compartment, while others, in desperation, dashed off to the heads in other troop compartments. The facilities in our compartment normally were adequate, but D-Day morning found us all nervous, tense, and afraid. The veterans already knew what I was to find out. During periods of intense fighting, a man might not have the opportunity to eat or sleep, much less move his bowels. All the men grumbled and scowled at Haney, but because he was a gunnery sergeant, no one dared suggest he hurry. With his characteristic detachment, Haney ignored us, remained unhurried, and left when he pleased. The first light of dawn was just appearing as I left my gear on my bunk, all squared away and ready to put on, and went out onto the main deck. All the men were talking quietly, smoking, and looking toward the island. I found Snafu and stayed close by him. Corporal Merrill A. Snafu Shelton came from Louisiana. He was the gunner on our mortar, so we stuck together. He was also a Gloucester veteran, and I felt more secure around veterans. They knew what to expect. He pulled out a pack of cigarettes and drawled, "Have a smoke, Sledgehammer." "No, thanks, Snafu. I told you a million times I don't smoke." "I'll bet you 2 bits, Sledgehammer, that before this day is over, you'll be smoking the hell out of every cigarette you can get your hands on." I just gave him a sickly grin, and we looked toward the island. The sun was just coming up, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. The sea was calm. A gentle breeze blew. A ship's bell rang, and over the squawk box came, "Get your gear on and stand by." Snafu and I hurried to our bunks, nodding and speaking to other grim-faced buddies who were rushing to get their gear. In the crowded compartment, we helped each other with packs, straightened shoulder straps, and buckled on cartridge belts. Generals and admirals might worry about maps and tons of supplies, but my main concern at the moment was how my pack straps felt and whether my boondockers were comfortable. The next bell rang. Snafu picked up the 45 pounds of mortar and slung the carrying strap over his shoulder. I slung my carbine over one shoulder and the heavy ammo bag over the other. We filed down a ladder to the tank deck, where an NCO directed us to climb aboard an Amtrak. My knees got weak when I saw that it wasn't the newer model with the tailgate ramp for troop exit in which we had practiced. This meant that once the Amtrak was on the beach, we'd have to jump over the high sides, exposed much more to enemy fire. I was too scared and excited to say much, but some of the guys grumbled about it. The ship's bow doors opened and the ramp went down. All the tractor's engines roared and spewed out fumes. Exhaust fans whirred above us. Glaring daylight streamed into the tank deck through the open bow of the ship as the first Amtrak started out and clattered down the sloping ramp. Our machine started with a jerk, and we held onto the sides and to each other. The Amtrak's treads ground and scraped against the iron ridges on the ramp. Then it floated freely and settled onto the water like a big duck. Around us roared the voices of the ship's guns, engaged in the pre-assault bombardment of Peleliu's beaches and defensive positions.